Welcome to Learning from Smart People. I'm your host, Rob Oliver, and with me today is a good friend of mine, Mike Wornell. He is a truck driver for Source One Trucking and joins us today to give us his expertise on problem solving. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit, how long have you been driving trucks?
I've been driving trucks since 2011, so it'd be 9 years.
What kind of truck driving have you done?
LTL truck driving, which is under the line haul operation, which is 500-600 miles a day, but home every day, and now hauling fuel.
Cool. So hauling fuel, like what kind of area do you cover?
Around here, it'd be the greater Pittsburgh area, probably as far north as I-80. Far south is Cumberland, Maryland, West Virginia, just pretty much within two and a half hours from my home base in Delmont.
When you're delivering fuel from where to where?
Picking up at what we call load racks, which is just fuel yards, and delivering to retail customers, or in some occasions, wholesale customers such as rail yards, private trucking companies, stuff like that.
All right, and by retail customers, you're basically meaning gas stations.
Correct.
I guess one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show today is when you're going to these gas stations and you're dropping off fuel, it's not exactly the easiest process in the world, is it?
It can be. I mean, some days are very easy. Some days are not. I mean, everything's defensive.
What do you mean by defensive?
You know, some people prepare their day to be successful. We prepare our day to be safe. We prepare our day for a possible failure, a possible problem. That's driving a truck in general. Everything's defensive.
Okay. When you and I were talking about this a little bit, I was thinking about even just the logistical issue of you getting your big tanker truck into a gas station. That's got to be a huge problem for you.
It can be. A lot of your most modern gas stations, your bigger ones, at least in this area, like the Geckos, the Sheets, the Speedways, they're all designed to be large pieces of property, all designed to accommodate trucks. So even those sometimes can be difficult depending on the traffic that's in the parking lot. It's your small, what I would call mom-and-pop stations or stations that's been around for 50, 60 years that really aren't designed to take 65 feet of vehicle in the lot. Before you ever pull into a station, you're always trying to figure out, how am I getting out? It's not just getting in, it's how am I getting out? Can I get close to the drops without hitting a car, hitting a pump, having someone hit me? It's like I said, it's totally defensive. You're just trying to make decisions that are safe and that can prohibit any type of accident.
It was interesting to me because I was thinking about this and thinking about your idea of problem solving. I said to you that the first thing that we need to do in problem solving is to identify the problem. And I felt kind of like my wife was in the room because you told me I was wrong. When it comes to dealing with problems, what is the first thing that you've got to do, Mike?
Are you asking me, does the problem already exist, or am I preparing for a problem?
That's exactly what your answer to me was. So I think what you said was that you are not identifying the problem. You're anticipating a problem. What does that look like in reality?
I guess you'd have to ask the question, what are the problems that could happen in my field? The problems are, A, you can be in a physical accident with the truck. B, you could get to a station and not get the proper dimensions of the tank, not get the proper stick readings, whatever, and you overfill the tank, which could cause backfeed into your vapor line and blow out. You either got a spill you got to worry about, or an accident, or cross-dropping, as they call it.
So you dropped a lot of words on me there that I'm not sure that I'm familiar with. Tell me, what does it mean to stick a tank?
Every fuel station has what's the most popular is called Vitaroot. Vitaroot is an actual name brand of a computer system that's in all the gas stations. It prints out a ticket. It shows the tank sizes, what's in the fuel, the volume of fuel that's in the tank. You can go into a store and get a Vitaroot. The Vitaroot's going to tell you the volume that's currently in the ground, the capacity that it could hold. Hauling fuel, everything is 90%, not 100%. So if you got a 10,000-gallon tank, you can only put 9,000 gallons of fluid into the ground. That's a law. It can't exceed it because of vapor, because of pressure. Because if there's no air movement, you got the air that's expanding, you got the air that's contracting. otherwise it pushes the fuel up through stacks and you can't overload it beyond 90%. So when I say stick to tank, a lot of your bigger stations could have a 20,000 gallon tank. It's a 20,000 gallon tank. It's a 120 inch. 120 inch is the max capacity. So obviously what you do is, like, we know rule of thumb, we normally haul up to 8,500 gallons of fuel in a truck just for weight reasons. A 20,000 gallon tank, 90% of it, 18,000. So you don't want to be any more than 18,000. You get the VEED route, you look at it, but you don't always trust a computer. Everyone thinks a computer's perfect, but let's face it, there could be some type of airflow or something that causes the computer to read wrong. So you stick the tank.
It's one of those things, we've all been to the grocery store and you go to buy something and you can't buy it because the computer says that they're out of stock on the item. You have it in your hand, the computer says it's out of stock, but right. Yeah. So what you're doing is you're double checking the computer.
You're double checking the computer, but you're not only double checking the computer, the stick, as old as it is or seems compared to a computer system, it's the most accurate. So the stick is what you go by. If my stick says I got 50 inches of fuel on the ground, but the VEED route says I got 45, I go by 50. I ignore the VEED route system. I go by what my stick says.
You have a stick. It's a piece of wood that goes down into the tank, and it measures exactly how much fuel is in the tank. And so you're getting a measurement in distance, and you've got to kind of do the calculations to figure out if there's this much gas on the stick, then I can put this many gallons worth of fuel into the tank.
Correct. Correct. And then we also stick it when we're done, and that all gets put onto a form that gets handed to the station. So
you talked to me also about cross-dropping. What does that mean?
Cross-dropping is if you put one brand of product into another brand's tank. For instance, if you put diesel into an 87-octane tank. You got so many different kinds of fuel. I mean, most stations have diesel. You have 87-octane, 89-octane. You have 93-octane. There's your standard. So every brand has its own tank, except for the 89-octane, which all modern stations, it mixes 87 and 93 at the physical pump.
You're just making sure that you're putting the right type of fuel into the proper tank.
Yes.
And how many different types of fuel are you going to be able to carry on one tanker truck?
Not to make it complicated, but it depends on the type of trailer you got. Put it this way, gasoline, if it's just gasoline, you can haul, if you got four compartments, you can have four different, you can have 87, 93, 89, you could have whatever. It's when you mix diesel into the mix that you have to have double bulkheads separating gas and diesel. So my trailer's a double bulkhead, so I can haul four different brands of gas and diesel together. Some trailers you cannot.
Let me just say that I am learning more about driving a gas truck than I ever imagined. I thought it was pretty simple. Like, you just have a big tanker truck, it's full of gas. He pulls into the gas station, he puts it in the ground, and I get it out and I drive around. I've never put the thought into realizing how complicated it is to know how much gas goes in the ground, what type of gas it is. When you're going into a gas station, you've got to have a plan of attack as to how you're going to go in, because you mentioned all the obstacles that you're dealing with. You want to make sure that you are getting close enough to the drops. What's the proper terminology for me? Is the drop spot?
The drops.
Okay. You got to make sure that you can get yourself back out of there without running over anybody. How do you kind of create that plan for the places that you've been?
The places I've been, obviously experience says what to do. You've done it enough so you know the layout of the property. The layout of the property is the most important at first. That's the first defense, because if you know the property, you know your entrance, you know your exit. If there's only one entrance and one exit, there's a room to turn around. The point I'm making is if you've been there, you've done it. You know, been there, done that type of thing. So you know how to plan. It's when you haven't been there. Me personally, Google Maps. I pull up Google Maps on my phone. I get a satellite image. I get a view of the entrance, the exit. And I try to get a game plan. And when I pull up to the station, if I have to, I got my flashers on. I stop the truck. I will get out of the truck and I go look. There has been times that I've pulled in nose first into a station prematurely and had to back out onto a 3 or 4 lane road. And that's not safe. And so, I've obviously asked for help. You know, people help me back out or whatever. But yeah, you don't want to do that.
What I'm hearing you say is that you are doing the proper prior planning. My dad taught me when I was a kid, proper prior planning prevents poor performance. You're not trying to wait until a problem exists to figure out how to solve that problem. You're anticipating the problem, and then you're doing homework beforehand so that you've got the lay of the land and you're getting a picture of how to approach this. You're developing a strategy before you ever get even close to that gas station.
Correct. Yeah, you don't want to make a decision on a little road that screws up traffic or screws you up or potential for an accident. Like I mentioned when we started this conversation, it's defensive. You know, when you were a kid, your parents taught you defensive driving. That's pretty much it's defensive driving. It's defensive setup. Everything is defensive. If you stop it before it's a problem, then there's no problem.
Dude, I am hearing you talk about this and I'm thinking about it from my perspective as a speaker. When I'm going somewhere to speak, I need to anticipate what the issues are. I know that it's not about drops. It's not about sticking tanks, but it's about room setup. It's about microphones. It's about PowerPoints, all of those things. So I need to do my homework beforehand so that when I get there, I have everything kind of lined up to make sure that the problems don't happen and the issues don't come up, because I've done my homework. I've got a backup plan in place and I'm ready to anticipate what's going to come next. How often do you get to go to new and different stations, or do you kind of have the same area that you go to all the time?
I'd say 90% of the time I have the same area, but I can tell you for the most part, at least once every week or two, you get a new one. And that just goes into the memory banks and you just kind of remember, okay, I've been there. But I will say, if I get a store that I've never been to, or a commercial con I've never been to, my first line of defense is I'll look at it on Google. And then I'll call another driver, because then a lot of times you'll get another driver that's been there and they're going to tell you what they've learned. You know, you kind of learn as doing. You know, sometimes you make a mistake, you do something wrong, and that, you know, that's your education for the future. So I do depend on other drivers. Yeah. I mean, you can prepare all you want, but I think you and I both agree, even prepared people have problems.
Mike, you just made two really important points that I want to highlight. Number one, failure is one of the biggest opportunities for learning. When you make a mistake, that's going to teach you, okay, don't do that again. Or it's going to give you the incentive. How do I not do that again? The other is establishing a relationship with people that have been there before you. So being able to share with them or have them share with you, yeah, I was there. You got to be aware of this. You've got to watch out for this potential issue. Two very key points, I think, in making sure that we're avoiding problems. If you are going out and 90% of the time you're going to the same places, how do you avoid complacency? How do you avoid it just becoming a monotonous thing where you pull in and you drop the stick, then you drop the fuel, and then you're out of there, and somehow it becomes kind of the same thing over and over again? And my guess is that if you're just doing the same thing over and over again, you become more prone to mistakes. How do you avoid that issue?
Well, great question, Rob, but I tell you how I view it. If you're doing the same thing over and over again and you did it right all the other times, you know, you're setting a precedent on how to do it properly. A lot of what I do, my job's not hard. You don't make snap decisions. You know, you think things through for a moment. If you're not sure, you don't do anything. I'd have to say that's the biggest thing in fuel. If you have any problem where you don't have the proper answer, and I don't mean a answer, I mean the proper answer, you leave. I've done that. I've been to a private station where I didn't know tank sizes. They were closed. Dispatch didn't know. Nobody knew. I didn't risk dropping any fuel. It's not worth it. Yeah. Sometimes you got to make the decision to retreat before you make a problem.
Again, I just want to highlight what you said there. Sometimes it's better to not do something than to do the wrong thing.
Right. The problem with my job compared to a lot of jobs, and forgive me, I don't know your job, Rob. I mean, I know what you do, but I've never done it. So if you're speaking and you stutter or you say something wrong, it's not, for the most part, it's not harming anyone. If I screw up and I have a massive spill, or if I have something wrong, or there's a fire, or there's an explosion, the risk of hurting people is big. That's why, I mean, we're taught our company is very safety oriented, to the point where they'd rather you not deliver a customer and have the repercussions there on their end than deliver one unsafely. They just refuse to have you make a mistake that's going to cost somebody, not only financial, it's not just financial. I mean, that is a part of it. Don't get me wrong. Any business thinks financial, but it's also the harm it could cause.
You know, it's interesting because you said earlier, like, hey, my job's really simple. It's not that complicated. And yet the implications of you not doing that simple job properly puts a lot of people at risk.
Yeah, the part that makes it simple is, well, it's repetition. You know, we talked about repetition. You know, my first couple weeks in doing this job, I was a nervous wreck. You know, there's so many little things you think about. Like, it's something as stupid as draining the hose. What does that mean? Well, when I'm done loading a compartment, my Scully lights say the compartment's empty. Well,
okay, what's a Scully light?
Scully light's an electronic probe that's in the tank. You have one for the top of the tank so you don't overfill your truck. And you have one at the bottom that says that there's fuel in the tank. If the top one comes on, that shuts the whole system down. You got a problem. If the bottom one's on, it's on when there's fuel in the truck. When you empty the fuel, the light goes out. But you could also, my front compartment, my inner tube could be 12 feet, 15 feet long. And then you hit my 4-inch hose that's 12 feet long. You know how many gallons of fuel go in 24 feet of 4-inch line? It's a lot of fuel. So just because the light goes out doesn't mean it's empty. It's not. You could have another 30, 40 gallon sitting in 24 feet of hose and tube. So you got to be patient. You got to drain it. My first day by myself, I remember unhooking the hose, and thank goodness I didn't spill anything. I unhooked the hose. I didn't drain the hose. It was so heavy, and I'm wondering, why is it heavy? And then it finally lightened up. Well, because I was moving it to the next compartment, I drained it myself. But that was a reminder. There's still fuel in that line. So you just got to be a little patient. You got to drain it. Don't try to move something with 20 gallons of fuel. It's heavy. You know, you risk dropping it. 20 gallons of gasoline on a property looks like you just spilled 1,000. It's going to rainbow. You can see that sheen on the property, and it's just going to expand. It makes for just a panic amongst people that you just got to be careful.
You just said that early on in your career, like your first day by yourself, that you made a mistake. And what you learned from that mistake on day one is something that stuck with you to today. It's a reminder to all of us, we are going to make mistakes, but those mistakes are the things that are teaching moments. And it's hopefully something that we're not going to repeat. You talked a little bit about the safety danger of when you make a mistake. What also is the financial danger of when you're making mistakes?
Depends on the stake. If you cross drop, like we talked about before, your financial burden is you're going to get fined. That company will fine us because what you just did is you put the wrong fuel in the wrong tank. Now they have to shut their pumps off. So now they have just halted all sale of gasoline or diesel, whatever product they're trying to sell. Well, if you put gas and diesel, obviously you're going to shut the diesel tank down. The gasoline tank's still going to work. But you know the point I'm making. You got to shut them down. So now their retail establishment has now stopped selling fuel. And the only time they can restart it is when you make arrangements to have another truck come out, pump the fuel out of the ground. Then another truck has to come and put the right fuel back in because you just emptied your tank. It's just a process that could be in excess of 12 to 24 hours. So 12 to 24 hours, you just prevented them from selling any fuel. So that's the financial burden. That is, you know, you figure if my company, it's costing them because all that fuel they put in the ground in the wrong, they eat it. They're going to pay for it. The retail establishment ain't paying for it. The retail establishment is losing potential business. That's why under contracts, they have little, I call it fines. They'll fine the company I work for causing them a problem. So it becomes costly. The big expensive one is a spill. Because when you spill fuel anywhere, if that fuel runs into a waterway, if that fuel runs into just property, just regular dirt mound, it has to be dug up. You got the EPA involved. You got fines. You got companies, construction companies you're bringing out to dig all that property up because they have to get it. The soil's contaminated. Everything's contaminated. The average cross drop could cost our company $100,000. Think of it this way. They put gasoline into a diesel truck. A diesel truck is pumping fuel at the same time you're loading gas into a tank. Five more pickup trucks leave. We all know just a regular diesel pickup truck, the motor's $10,000 to $15,000. So if there's a problem, now our company is going to be sued. We're going to be liable to pay for all mechanical repairs of the customers to put the wrong fuel in. We're going to be liable to fix and have their pumps primed. I mean, we're liable for all of it, all because someone didn't pay attention. Like I said, safety oriented, they give you cow tags to put on. There's tumblers on the tanks that color coded. Like you just got to take your time. I guess that's the biggest thing. For my job, you got to take your time.
The point that you're making there, it is about the details. It's about making sure that you are getting the small stuff right. And if you take care of the small stuff, if you take care of the details, then it's all going to work itself out in the end.
I told you it's an easy job. It's an easy job when you pay attention to what you said, the small details. If the small details all line up, the job's easy. It's not hard.
What is the biggest problem that you have faced or that you have heard a story about somebody else facing?
Spills. Spills and cross drops. That's the biggest one. Spills are very expensive. Because if the company proves, because you got to remember, a lot of these retail establishments have cameras. Our trucks have cameras. So, and I'm not saying you want to lie or hide it, but we've had drivers, or I mean, I don't know any personally, but I've heard stories of drivers who tried to lie. Meanwhile, they're on camera. So right. What happens? You know, you see the retail establishment has cameras all over their building. They show the driver sitting in the cab of the truck. That happened one day. You never leave the drops when you're dropping. You're standing right there, because if there is a problem, even if it's not a problem you caused, maybe you get an ear that breaks off your hose and the hose comes off. I mean, you've got to be there to shut the internals. You got to be there to prevent massive damage. Yeah, so people lie and they get fired. That's what I've heard.
What are the little annoyances? We talked about the big problems. What are the little issues that you face as a trucker?
People on the road with me.
Tell me about that.
I have a lot of pet peeves. You ask my wife, she'll say I have road rage. I don't have road rage to the point where I want to really harm somebody, but I do get angry. When I'm loaded, I'm 80,000 pounds. I'm not going to stop quick. So you get someone pulls out in front of you, or somebody that passes you on a four-lane road and literally cuts right in front of you. And then you load that lay on the horn to them. It's your fault. It's all, see, when you have a commercial license, the state is going to view you as the professional. So any type of accident or anything, you're under a microscope. Meanwhile, everyday people wreck all the time, and it's called accidents. When we wreck, it's called an incident, and they investigate incidents. So things that bother me at a retail establishment is when I pull in and I see cars literally parked over the drops, and you request them to move, and they kind of stare at you like you don't exist. Or they get mad at you because your big tractor trailer is blocking the air pump that they want to get air at. And they start yelling at you. Meanwhile, you're doing your job and you have to do it safely. So, I mean, those are just minor things. I mean, I get over it. Don't get me wrong. The driving down the road is probably the part that gets me the most.
You know, it's interesting because what you're talking about is the people that are out on the road driving around in their cars are the ones that annoy you. And yet, if there were no people driving around, there would be no need for the product that you deliver. And it would be kind of one of those things where your job would go away if the people that annoy you stopped being out there. It's kind of a catch-22 in that whole situation.
Rob, the best thing I can say here, and I mean this with all my heart, and your kids, my kids would all be mad for me saying, well, it's too late for them now. They're all old enough to drive. But every kid should be forced to ride in a truck one day, or I went through what's called Smith System training. Smith System training, and I'm embarrassed to tell you, I can't quote them all. Oh, they're like aim high in the steering wheel, meaning you don't just look 10 feet in front of you. The average person looks 10 feet in front of them. They don't even use the mirrors. They know where they got to go, and that's all they care about. Leave a cushion. Prepare. I mean, if kids driving cars at 16 years old were trained like the 21-year-old who just first got a CDL, I tell you what, there'd be less accidents. I really believe it. I'm not going to say you're going to get rid of it, because face it, probably 30-40% of truck drivers are idiot drivers too. I've seen it on the road. I think the training has lacked. I mean, all we do is we let parents teach these kids to drive, and we just send them out on the road. And there's no experience. And I'm not saying you need experience, because how do you get experience? You got to have the first opportunity to get experience. But yeah, I really think the training has lacked when it comes to new drivers.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because as you know, I had my spinal cord injury when I was 21 years old. I had been driving for 5 years before that. I got my license as soon as I turned 16. When I went to learn how to drive again, I already had the basics of driving down. I knew how to judge braking distances. I knew how to, as you said, aim high. I knew about, you know, braking into a turn and accelerating out of the turn, those kind of things. And now all I had to learn was how to use the controls to drive. I already knew the judgment end of it. And it actually made me a much more cautious driver, because realizing that I am driving with my hands, I'm driving with adaptive equipment, I need to be as you have said from the very beginning, defensive in how I'm handling things. So definitely a lesson that we all need to learn. So I'm wondering, when people are out on the road, how can they show appreciation to truckers? Because right now, truck drivers are keeping our world afloat during the middle of this whole COVID-19 thing. The truck drivers are making sure that the toilet paper and the groceries and the, everything that we need, including the fuel that we need to get around, that's all getting to the retail end of things because of truck drivers. How can we say thank you?
Oh, besides just a sincere thank you personally to drivers, just be safe on your own. I mean, truck, let's face it. I just painted a picture like all four-wheel drivers are terrible. They're not. There's not. Mm. And there's a ton of truck drivers that are terrible drivers. Just leave a cushion. Leave space around the truck. Don't hover next to one. Don't stop in front of one. Don't cut one off. That's the biggest thank you can get me. It's just give me the room to do what I got to do and to do it safely.
Excellent. Well, Mike, I do want to say then, thank you so very much for what you do. You are out there keeping us on the road. You're out there making sure that we've got what we need to take our cars. And we take it for granted. Of course, we're going to show up at a gas station and there's going to be gas in the tank and we're just going to pick up the nozzle, put it in our tank and away we go, but not realizing and not appreciating the people behind the scenes that make that happen. Thanks for what you're doing. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think that we've all learned a lot today from what Mike's been talking about, both about the trucking industry and about being appreciative of what they do, but also about how to approach problems and about how to do some problem solving. Mike, you are indeed a smart person, and I have learned from you. However, at the end of every show, what we do is we do three questions to establish your humanity. Here are your three questions. Number one, what is your go-to TV watching snack?
Anything salty, chips or pretzels.
Number two, have you ever told your kids something that wasn't true in order to protect them?
Absolutely.
Can you tell us what it was?
Ooh, I just know me well enough. I know I did it.
What about your dog?
It's funny you said that. I was just thinking that. Yes, my daughter was young and I had a dog that was very mean. He bit everybody. He threatened my grandson. My grandson was a baby once and that made my decision. We put it down. And when we put it down, I was scared to tell my, man, I don't even remember how old Cody was then. She's probably eight, nine years old. And I knew she'd be mad. So we told her we sent him to a farm in Ohio so that he could run free. I believe it was your kids a couple years later who broke the news that the farm is the term for, we put him down. So thank you to your kids. Yeah, that's probably the one thing I did. I just wanted to protect her emotions at that point. And deep down, I guess it was selfish on my end. I didn't want to get the abuse.
I think you told me the story that Cody eventually, when my kids told her that one night at dinner, Cody decided like, hey, Dad, maybe we should go visit Diesel on the farm.
Yeah. My wife knew and she played me like a fiddle. She sat down at the table and we're eating and she goes, Dad, I really miss Diesel. And I said, well, honey, he's having a great time. And she goes, I want to go see him. And I looked at my wife and my wife looked at me with a grin on her face. And I thought she was just grinning because, you're caught in the middle now. And I said, honey, it's out in Ohio. And Cody says, well, Dad, Ohio isn't far. I said, yeah, but it's out on the western part of the state. I mean, it's every bit of a 3-4 hour ride. I don't have time to go out there. I said, we'll consider it later. And yeah, then she broke the news to me that she knew. So.
All right. Last question for you. Are you a sing in the shower person?
You know, no, I'm not. But I will tell you, for some reason at Christmas time, Silent Night, if I get that on my head going into a shower, long as nobody's home to make fun of me, yes, I will belt it out.
Fantastic. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks for what you're doing to keep our country running. My name's Rob Oliver. You have been listening to Learning from Smart People. And this is just a reminder that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.